Incoming pitch. Spin rate of 2,500 RPM, 95.6 miles per hour.
Adjusting swing, 12 degrees. Proceed with launch angle.
Alrighty, folks. Rob DiPietro at Deadpool Hitter on Twitter. Welcome back to another Launch Angle podcast. Shortly, I'll be joined by my co-host Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver. You can find them on Twitter too, at Rob Silver and at Jeff W. Zimmerman. We're coming at you with a little recap of our main event slash auction slash NFBC live weekend in Las Vegas. I got a chance to meet both Jeff and Rob and plenty of other people that I've always talked to but not have met, and it was awesome. It was a very good time. It was an amazing experience, and I highly suggest anyone who had never been out there to come experience that. It's fantasy baseball in its glory. It's just nonstop drafts and chatter of fantasy baseball in between the drafts. It's fantastic. And just experiencing live drafting versus on the computer is just, I've experienced New York, but having eight main events going on at one time in Las Vegas was just truly remarkable. So, so we kind of do like a draft weekend wrap, retrospective, kind of what our strategies were heading into the big drafts and how it turned out. We get into a lot of awesome talk about helium players and how they're, you know, gained steam, players such as Jeffrey Springs and Drew Rasmussen and Reed Detmers, and kind of if you're liking those guys, if, you know, if it's your turn to attack them or not, if the cost has gone too wild for you. So we have a nice loose conversation about that, and then we hit a couple of different segments at the end. We do kind of go into like what our targets were coming into the season and what our fades players that we were fading as well this season, and then we do a quick little predictions, fun game where we talk about one player that's going in the top 50 of drafts right now, the main events, who we think might have a chance to end up past pick 200 value. And we do one pitcher, one hitter apiece, and then we flip-flop it and talk about a player that's going past 200 that may have a shot to return top 50 value. And obviously it's opening day, Thursday, March 30th, and it's glorious. Baseball is back, and it's just fantastic, and I hope everyone is having a wonderful time enjoying this wonderful sport. And if you have not yet done so, I know a lot of people have joined my Patreon, the Pull Hitter Patreon, but you're going to get two Launch Angle podcasts per month on there, as well as the two you'll receive publicly. And but that's not it. No, I have so much more going on there. We have a wonderful Discord that's growing strong. It's 180 people deep talking about fantasy baseball all day long, strategies, lineup advice, start, sit, fabs, whatever. We're talking about it all, and it's truly awesome. And I'm going to do you're just going to get a lot more than just the Launch Angle as well. And I think if you just give it a month to try it out, I don't think I'm going to disappoint you with the amount of effort I'm putting into doing what I'm going to do. So if you do feel obliged to come and try it out for $5 for the month, that's the smallest tier. I think you'll be quite satisfied with just what the $5 gives you. And there's always a chance to go up to if you want. And thank you everyone just to give me opportunity to give you me your ear, to give me your ear, and letting you know about that. So with that out of the way, I'm going to roll in the heavy hitters, Rob Silver and Jeff Zimmerman, and we'll get on with this episode.
Here's the pitch.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Launch Angle podcast. I'm Rob DiPietro. I am here with my co-host Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver, coming back and recovering from a long Las Vegas weekend live events. My first experience ever, first time meeting these meatballs, and it was a amazing experience with everyone there. So thank you guys for hanging out with me for a little bit and actually, you know, showing, you know, like, hey, let's act like we like this guy a little bit. So what's up, fellas? How you guys doing on this beautiful opening day of Major League Baseball? We finally made it.
I'm just trying to get myself together. It's just like I just had finished a draft this morning. So it's I haven't unpacked anything. But games are on, so that's the most important thing. And just start seeing what's happening. Kind of the one thing about today is like it's an enjoyment day, but it's not really a day you can hang your hat on a lot. I mean, maybe some things with the lineups, but I mean, pretty much any pitcher, there's not really any going to like gain any value today. They're like the aces. I mean, maybe Kyler Muller's status is going to go up if he throws a shutout or something. But I mean, pretty much today, it's just a great day to just enjoy baseball.
Yeah, it's also a really good day to be careful about your mental health as it relates to fantasy baseball. Like, you've prepped all year, you drafted a guy, you believed in a guy. There was literally nothing that could happen today that should convince you, boy, I screwed up. Even if your pitcher gets shelled, it's like it's one day, and you just have to keep saying to yourself, if this was June 18th and this happened, I'd barely even notice. And you just notice everything because suddenly it's so amplified. The guy you thought was going to bat second all year is batting seventh. You know, the guy who you thought was going to be awesome goes 0 for 4 with 3 strikeouts. You just need to take a deep breath, enjoy it. And tomorrow is going to be another day, right? Like, I just think it's hard because we're humans. It's a very human reaction for both confirmation bias. I knew this guy was going to be great. He is great. Look at game one. And the opposite, which is I am devastated. And you have to be strong. Like, you just have to let it roll. It's a long, long season. But boy, it was fun hanging out, Rob, in Vegas and meeting you. That was awesome.
It was a blast. I mean, what an amazing group of people that go down there, right? It's just amazing. Everyone is so awesome and so deep into fantasy baseball and just not bags of shit either. And it was just really refreshing to just be able to have these little conversations, these pockets of conversation. It just never ends. It's, you know, obviously, like, we talk on Twitter and on here, but like being in person and jumping around from a draft to you know, then hanging out watching a draft and then hanging out at dinner and talking about baseball. It was truly awesome. And Greg and Tom and Derek, they're just truly awesome. They put together a wonderful weekend, and I can't wait to do it again for sure.
There's no doubt. And I'm glad to know, despite how much I had to drink, that I still, like, I think I got close to the line of being a bag of shit, but that I still stayed, you know, slightly on the not a bag of shit line, regardless of, or at least you have forgiven me for and blamed the alcohol for any moments when I was a bag of shit while I was drinking.
No, you stayed right on that line.
You can swaddle the line of bag of shit, but as long as you don't cross the line, I'm okay.
Yep. Don't light it on fire. Don't step on it.
But quite sincerely, now, like, Jeff and I in previous years, since we started doing the podcast, have had people come up to us in Vegas, and people are so nice, and it means a ton. But boy, the reaction was positive, Rob, about the podcast since you've started doing that. And it's very gratifying. It's really nice to hear. Like, we all have, you know, we talk into a microphone, it goes into the ether, but getting positive feedback about you and about the podcast since you came on, I think it's deserved, but I think it's really nice to hear.
Yeah, I totally agree. I got some great feedback, and it's wonderful to hear, for sure. Like, it's almost to the point where it's overwhelming, you know, when you hear how many good things people say about it, and it's like, oh man, like, this is crazy. This is it's a good feeling, though. I absorbed every minute of it. I tried to just stay. My wife just kept texting me, like, just stay in the moment, you know, like, be in it, live it, you know, cherish it, and then, you know, don't think about anything else. Like, don't think about anything at home and just chill there, you know. And it was awesome. It was just great.
You know? No doubt Fred 12745 will come on Twitter later and tell us how awful we are, so that'll even things out later in the day.
Absolutely. So how did you guys feel you did this weekend with your draft and the live events? Went there with the plan. Did you put it into effect? How did you execute it? And was there anything, I guess, in the room that, you know, stopped you from executing your plan?
Jeff, why don't you go first?
I think the plan is, I mean, we came in with one. I drafted two of the teams with Tanner Bell, and then I had two myself over the weekend I drafted. And there was some in the auction, we had misjudged kind of the split, and that caused a little bit of issue because we were about a third of the way through, didn't have one pitcher. So we came out just fine with that. We kind of just pounded those guys that going out in the eighth round, had got like five of them. So that, I mean, at the end, it worked out fine. That was kind of the one. It's the second year in the main event. We, Tanner and I sat down. We were like, okay, this is our spot in the first round. We'll get that. And then we'll look to see who comes back in the second round. And it's like, okay, we're looking at this. And we were drafting toward spot 10, no, nine. We had nine. And we're like, okay, we're probably going to get a starter or Otani, or if a hitter falls, that one of the top ones, we'll go with that. And then we'll probably end up with one of the third basemen in the second round. But when Freddie Freeman fell, that kind of was like, okay, I guess that plan's kind of out the water. So we'll get Freeman. And that was the infamous main event where also Soto made it all the way to the third round. Because it was like, we passed on Soto to get Freeman. I was like, well, I can't do that. You can't let him. Freeman's definitely the number one choice. So it was, and from that point on, at least for the people there, it seemed like the pitching was a little bit higher. And it's just something you have to kind of deal with. It was just move everyone up a little bit and just can't really fall behind because it never evened out.
Yeah, no, I mean, I tweeted, like about 2 weeks before Vegas, I had this plan, and it was a brilliant plan. It was a well thought through plan. Was I was going to get Springs and Rasmussen at the 9-10 turn, and they were going to be my fourth, fifth starter because I'm smarter than everybody else, and they'll just be sitting there, and everybody else is going to be waiting to take them like in the 11th round, and I'll be like, ha ha ha, suckers, you're not getting them. I just took them in the 9th, 10th round. Springs is now routinely like a 6th round pick. Now drafts are over, but by the end was routinely a 6th round pick.
One other one is in our draft. We really needed some speed, and it was like, this is just the point. It's where we have him graded was Jose Siri.
I'll be talking about Jose Siri a bunch of times on this podcast.
So I go back on the break over to you, and it's like, yeah, we set, you know, the low on Jose Siri for about like two rounds, and I look up and you had beaten us by like four spots, and I was like, well. Yeah. I guess we're on the same boat without even talking about it at all.
We had never discussed the name Jose Siri with one another ever. I'm quite certain ever. Yeah. So I came into the Vegas weekend with really two strategies, if you want to call them that. So I don't know about you guys. I'm amazed by people who can look at a team after a draft that is not their own and like Rain Man, just evaluate the team. I'm not that guy. I can't just eyeball a draft board and be like, I think you got you're 17 home runs short, but I like what you did with your eighth starting pitcher there. Like, I just can't do that. The one thing I can do though now in terms of evaluating a team, especially in a 15 team league, 12 teams are just even harder for me to evaluate. But in 15 team leagues is I look at who your fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, 10th starter is.
Yep.
And that is the easiest way. It's by definition only looking at one thing, but it's the back half of your starting staff. And I'm amazed how many people leave drafts, good drafters. I mean, there's no right or wrong approach, but for me, it's not the approach I think is the best approach, with seven starting pitchers rostered, meaning they have nobody on their bench, or they have one spec starting pitcher. Because what that is telling me is you will be streaming starting pitching. Like, that is, if you only have seven starting pitching on a 15 team mixed league team, there is zero scenario that you're not streaming. So I went into every draft where I had very clear guidelines, and I'm realistic, the Springs and Rasmussen jokes aside, about like where the group that I want as my SP5 are likely to go. And I know who the last guy I want as my SP5 is. And then 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and 10. And I really wanted my 9th starting pitcher by round 20. There were a couple of spec guys in past round 20 that I was fine with, and I'm good taking a little bit of a risk, or I think that they're stable enough that I'm okay with. But I wanted at least one bench starting pitcher by round 20, which means I was going to be short hitting, because if I have two closers and eight or nine starting pitching after 20 rounds, by definition, I have a lot of hitting spots still open. And I was okay with that as an approach. And I managed to do that other than an auction where by rule you can't do that. You're only allowed to auction 9 pitchers. So when you have your 9th pitcher in an auction, you're done with pitching. So then you need to get the pitchers very quickly in the reserve rounds because otherwise they're gone. But in the drafts, I did that. And even though like every year in the main pitchers went up early, I was very happy with the guys I got as my 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th starting pitcher. And I think that's what they could be the wrong guys. I could do very badly, but I got the guys I wanted, number one. And then number two quickly is my guess is in every 15 team draft that was taking place in Vegas or online, 13 to 14 of the 15 teams said some version of going in, I want one anchor reliever, one anchor closer, and then I'll figure it out from there. Or I'll take two anchor relievers. There were not a lot of teams, some who I think went into the draft saying, don't really want an anchor reliever. The problem is by the time the injuries to Diaz and Iglesias had been fully factored in, there in my book at least were 7, if I squinted, 8 anchor relievers. And I'm not as good at math as Jeff or you, Rob, but if 15 teams want one, there's only 7 or 8 of them. There's something about the math that isn't going to quite work out to me. And I was really surprised that there wasn't more closer inflation. Because when the Diaz injury happened and then the Iglesias injury happened, I just assumed that everybody was going to look at this. Like 15 teams want one of these. There's only 7, maybe 8 of them available. You know, supply and demand, that should push up the price. And it really didn't. Like the price of closers were the price of closers. So I wanted one of them. And in 4 of my 5 drafts, I got one of them. And in the other one, I just made a decision that I needed something else. And there was a better pick there. But in all the Vegas drafts, I did that. The one thing I was disappointed about was you convinced me, Rob, like stay off Corbin Burnes. my first two drafts for reasons that I made the pick. So like I stand by the picks. But I have Corbin Burnes on 2 of my 5 teams, which I'm not, they were at good prices. Like I can rationalize it in lots of ways, but I'm not thrilled about that. Let's see how that goes.
You didn't get him as your SP1 though. Like one draft I saw in the second round.
Both of those teams, I have Strider as well. So right. he is my SP2 on both of those teams.
Right. And I did that with my general thing. Like he's not the SP1 that he was the whole draft season, you know, and then I heard Jeff Erickson and Scott Jenstad talking about how it was like that all season, and then it flipped during the main event, or like right before it too. It was Garrett Cole and leaped ahead of him as becoming the SP1, and they were like, it was just a dramatic shift, and I didn't want to tell them about the sheep sheet, but
you move markets. You move the market.
Yeah, major moves. But you touched on like the Jeffrey Springs and the Drew Rasmussen. Did you happen to get any of them?
I got Rasmussen on a couple of teams. He was still at a reasonable price. I liked other pitchers more than I like Springs a ton, and I get getting your guy, but there were guys still going in the 6th round that I just like more than Springs. I mean, Springs still does pitch on Tampa. Tampa is still going to, in many weeks, even with somebody as good as Springs, say you're going to get 2 times through the order and you're out. Like there, it's not. He's far from a guaranteed like top 15, top 20 starting pitcher. So, and that's where he was starting to creep into. And I liked other guys there. So I never paid the price to get Springs, but I did get Rasmussen still kind of 9th round price, which I thought was okay.
And I used my last auction as my last draft on Sunday was an auction. So I made a list of like, all right, who didn't I get this whole weekend? And man, I didn't really do a great job because it seems like many other people had that kind of list, because I had Rasmussen on that list and he went for $18. And I was just like, that point, I was like, man, I can get Pablo Lopez and Nathan Eovaldi for the same price, you know, just all those things that run through your head at, you know, when you're bidding up for that player. And yeah, it was just, man, it was tough. I got locked out on Rasmussen and Springs and Horner, Nico Horner too, which was very upsetting, but It just didn't work out that way, you know? So is there anybody else that you guys were really kind of targeting that maybe got kind of pushed up or just didn't fall your way? Any big targets, Jeff, that you didn't grab this week? I mean, I know you just told me off air that the OC draft this morning was a FOMO draft. So did you go and grab any of your guys this morning?
Yeah, I mean, we already talked about it, but it was I didn't have any DeGrom. I was kind of willing to take him. He was healthy, willing to have him on one team. I didn't want all my teams to rely on him going in, and I'd just be frustrated. But it was like, even the draft we did, our 750 OC, I was near the spot I was at. I was like, oh, I'll grab him there, and it didn't happen. So I'm trying to think if there's anyone that I'm mad I don't have. Not really. Probably the one I just had below some guys, and obviously others didn't, was Spencer Strider. I have a couple earlier shares, but here recently when he was like the first rounder, I just didn't have him that high. But otherwise, no, I kind of just spread it out also throughout the drafts. And then after like the fourth or fifth round, you can just get your guy. Like I said, if there's any of them down there that you got some FOMO on, then you just didn't get them. It was kind of more like those first rounders when you don't get, you know, three or four times to get them, you're just kind of out of luck, especially depending on where you pick in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. Like I did the diamond auction, and then I did four drafts, and all four drafts I picked at the back half of the draft. So I, by definition, have no Ronald Acuña. I think my Ronald Acuña is likely to be pretty good this year. He's not going to help
so?
Me.
He's already got a steal.
It's my hot take. I was going to save the hot take, but like, so all the top hitters I don't have. I got in one draft where I picked 11, I got a Bo Bichette. In last night's draft where I picked 15, I got a Vlad. So I have those guys, but I have none of the top hitters, but that's different. Like I wasn't picking there. The only guy who I sort of just didn't have the guts to do it, but I think I'm going to regret it, is Rodon. I think he's going to be back in like 3 weeks and it's going to be really good. And I think he was going at such a discount for good reason. I think that the don't draft injuries are going to find you has been so ingrained that, and it's for good reason. There is a good reason. You don't want to do the Justin Mason. You don't want six injured guys, but I think there was such a discount on guys like him, him specifically, because there's so much positive news that while there's a big risk, I think there's a big upside if he's back kind of in April pitching.
Yeah, I think in my auction, he was stuck at like 10 or 11, and I was biting my lip. I'm like, man, am I going to regret not jumping in right now? And, you know, hearing you say that is for sure. That's a reminder that I was in that spot. And yeah, that could be make or break for sure. And, you know, as we were there, obviously Tristan McKenzie gets hurt, you know, and that shifts the market too. So, and it's like, you know, I was in a draft with Zach Waxman, you know, when it happened. And, just showed him the news, you know, like it was just the initial news that he was out of the game. But then even that next day, you know, when, okay, it's like, who's going to take him where, you know,
and Severino when we were there too, right? Like, yes. Severino going down, it was a big loss. Like he was a target. I'll admit he was a target for me. Like I would have taken him. I obviously didn't end up taking him. He was hurt before my first draft, but like Severino moved the market because everybody else gets pushed up by one slot, by $2, however it ends up working out. That's the nature of the beast. I don't know that it's any better or worse this year than every year. Every year I think we say, oh, this is the worst I've ever seen. This is horrible. it's horrible. And next year we'll say the exact same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So Jeff, me and you went head to head in the OC, and we had a couple of, we were yelling out a couple of you meatball when, either you took one guy I like or I took a guy you like. But how did you, do any stalking of my player shares or player likes in the draft?
No, I usually don't for anyone. I mean, it's kind of like just more how I build my team. And especially in the 750, I was kind of out on my own little island. So I didn't really see anything that was kind of, it was more like the later picks. Like I kind of needed like, oh, this player, and it just didn't, you didn't let him stay around, but it was fun. The deal was overall just a tough room.
Yeah.
And that was part of it, was just like, well, we're all just going to have to, probably easily the hardest, 750 there was, since we were all, they all had come to Vegas for it. So
do you like, Rob, knowing somebody you're drafting with player preferences? Like, would you like to know the guy picking beside you seven guys he or she is targeting, or is it something that just messes with your head if you know who that person is on?
I think it messes with my head. I always feel like if I'm at the wheel and it's a slow draft, it's a totally different story. Like for I sure. can, yeah, for sure. But in a live draft, I mean, I'm just concentrated on my team. I just feel like anything that you're going to give to another team, any other thought besides building your best team, is just going to keep you from building your best team. So I really, I shut it out. I'm just worried about my path. Maybe if I know someone tends to draft a specific way, not even specific players, but just he'll build, he likes catchers, or he, something like that. But also too, like, you can anticipate, I'll have a guy next to me and it's like, oh, I know this guy likes I don't know, Matt Olson, but how am I supposed to know if he's not like diversifying that draft, And totally. So I'm going to take Matt Olson just because he may get him. And then he's like, ah, sucker. I don't know. It's just, there's so many things to go into someone else's brain and picks. And so I can't get wrapped up in that. I know people who definitely study the boards and study player preferences, but I don't have a way to bake that into a quick decision point on my end, So I don't really take it into account.
A quick story, that I think I told you guys in Vegas. So for the Platinum League, we use FAB to bid for draft spots. So if you want the first pick, you bid $200 of your own FAB. It comes off your FAB. You get the spot. Minimum bid is $10. So there were a few of us this year, including myself and Phil, a friend of the podcast, Phil Dussault, who were just going to bid nothing. Bid $10 and take whatever came. But my strategy going into the bidding is, because I knew Phil was going to do this, one, is not spend FAB. FAB was worth too much to bid for a spot. And two, I knew he was a Spencer Strider guy. So my concern was, because I didn't want Corbin Burns in the Platinum and I didn't want Jacob deGrom as my ace. I tried that last year. It didn't work out great in the Platinum. I wanted Strider as one of my two first picks. But I knew if Phil would, let's say, was at 14, he would take Spencer Strider going into the turn and take whatever hitter came back to him. So my whole strategy was, because I knew he really liked Spencer Strider, I had to pick ahead of Phil. So while I wasn't going to spend any money, I had to spend $10 more than Phil. And I would have gotten into a bidding war with him if I had to be ahead of him. Luckily, I got the 13 pick for $30. So $20 more, which I figure over 26 weeks is insignificant. The 13 pick, Phil got the 15 for $10 for the minimum bid. So I did take Strider at the 15. It went into Phil. And obviously, if Cole was there, if Cole had made it to 13, I would have given him Strider and I would have taken Cole. So that was the only scenario, was not taking Strider there. And Phil, so the person at 14 went hitter. Phil went hitter. And then 14 on the way back to me took Max Scherzer. So what it meant was, the reason why I took Corbin Burns, and I really took the minute, which I very rarely do, because I was between like Aaron Nola and Burns, and like the math was just, there was too big a drop between, like, at a certain point I'm just being, it's real. Oh, sorry. Jacob deGrom was also gone. So it was deGrom hitter, Scherzer. So I could not have taken deGrom as my second pitcher, which I might have done after Strider. So it was literally Burns, Nola, or a hitter. and I wanted to go pitcher pitcher. So that's how I ended up with Corbin Burns, was because I tried to outsmart Phil Dussault and ended up outsmarting myself, I think.
Well, the captain, Aaron Judge, goes yard in his first at bat, dead center. Geez. That's crazy. But Rob, how do you factor in bidding for those spots? I mean, it just seems to me, I've never been involved with it, I never thought about it, but it seems to me like suboptimal in a way. If you're going to pay up that much for fab use, if you want a spot ahead of it, but do you like work the numbers at all, or is just like, this is where I want to pick and I don't want to spend too much in fab? Simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have not come up with a formula on how to convert like fab into draft spot value. I think this year in particular, the first round is flat enough. Like, even if you like Ronald Acuna or Aaron Judge first, I think it's flat enough through the whole first round. And there are enough really good players that always slip into the second round, especially for the back half, that at least for me, there wasn't a huge advantage to being on the front half of the draft as opposed to the back half. And certainly for mains, I thought from a structural draft perspective, the back half was way better because of closers. So what I liked about the back half of drafts, different for a standalone league, but overall, was you were pretty close to guaranteed to getting one of those top level anchors, not Clase, not Hader, but kind of the next group down if you were at anywhere between like 11, 12, and 15. If you wanted to, you could choose not to at the 3-4, but if you wanted one, there was no draft that could go any way that you weren't going to get one of them. So I like that. But no, in terms of the platinum, I just think flat fab is way too valuable, and it becomes more valuable if you, unlike in a regular league, have a 20% advantage over everybody else, right? Like, so right. It's not just that I have $1,000 and you have $1,000. I have $999. You have $800 now. So I have such a hammer on day one that it becomes even more powerful than it does in a regular league, the fab. So I'm a big fan of just not spending it for a draft spot. Other people disagree, though.
Why was that implemented into the platinum? Was there like a specific?
Greg decided that because the money is so much, the buy-in, this is truly the most democratic, transparent, fairest way. Like, you couldn't. So what are the alternatives? Well, the alternatives are a KDS, which we use for every other draft, and that's pretty fair. But there's still luck involved. If you're the 13th person pulled out of the hat for KDS, you're at, you know, that's luck. Whereas this is fully within your control, and it's not also who has the biggest bankroll. So, because the alternative, you could do a league where it's like, let's bid with real money on what your draft spot is, but that's just who's the richest guy or the guy willing to spend the most money on it, which at a certain point, and I know this is obnoxious to say about a league where you're paying that much money to enter, it's obnoxious saying I'm going to spend an extra $1,000 of real money to get a draft spot I want. Like, it really is at a certain point truly obnoxious. It's disgusting at a certain point. And again, you could also say paying that much money for a fantasy baseball league is also disgusting, and you would be quite right, I think.
So. Yeah. So many ways you could go with that. I think hopping back into just the live experience, one of my favorite things, and you know, it's kind of crazy to experience, but when you're just sitting at the main event table with eight main events going on and just like hearing other names a mother draft, you know, coming through to your side. And it wasn't so much like the early guys. If you heard a name early, for me, when it was like, you know, in the 250 range or 260 range, and I hear Brandon Nimmo from another table, I'm like, what's going on at that table? You know, why did that happen there? But that I just thought that was, you know, almost to the effect was like, you know, Brad Boxberger, and you're like, I hope someone doesn't pick Brad Boxberger now, you know, like in my league, because maybe you're eyeing a guy. But it's an interesting, phenomenon that occurs there, you know, for sure. You're just hoping that no one hears that name and like, oh, I forgot about that guy, and just, you know, decides to take him for that reason.
Yeah, I think you'd be better off if you could wear like earplugs and not hear any of the ambient noise going on. Like, just stick to the table you're actually at, and don't allow it to play games with your head while that's all going down. Because it's both distracting and can get you to like reach for a guy or fade a guy, because it's like, I'm gonna look stupid if I take him here. He went six rounds ago with that, you know. Like, it's avoid all that stuff, but it is hard. It's distracting.
Rob, it was really pleasant to see you take Riley Green, though. That made my whole freaking weekend. I just got to say. Oh, man. Absolutely. So you guys want to touch on some any other stuff from the live weekends or the weekend of drafts before we head into some other topics? Jeff?
I'm good.
You're good?
Jeff's sitting back and watching baseball, I think.
Jeff's unpacking his suitcase. Like, oh man. All right, cool. So you guys want to talk about some of your biggest targets and fades of the season, if we haven't hit on some of them already, but there's some other guys I know that we could probably get to talk to if you want to explore that area. Jeff, sure. you want to go first?
Trying to think as a whole, I usually don't have a ton of quote unquote targets, but one guy that I was pretty much having like every league is Jose Suarez. I just thought what he did toward the end of the year was on par with what like top 20 pitchers went. I know he might not have the volume, so it was always just a big game of chicken because he was sitting at my top of my sheet for probably 5 or 6 rounds before I ever took him. Matt Vierling is another one that I was in. I just thought there was just a lot he was doing right when he made the trade. There's just no one else in Detroit. There was talk of him leading off. So I think I have him in almost every league. I got just a lot of Yandy Diaz with him getting first base. It wasn't so much as my first baseman, but I liked him as like my corner and hopefully maybe even like my bench. Like he could fill in at third and just kind of give me some flexibility. The other big thing is I went after was a lot of like hurt starters. Steven Matz, not that they're hurt now, but they're just injury prone. Steven Matz, Carlos Carrasco, Alex Wood, Alex Cobb. It's like there's other guys going earlier, like Jesus Luzardo, that have the same profile and you could get the same stats from. So I was just like, I know they're going to get hurt at some point. I'm just going to have to stream, but I'll take the good stats now and go with it that way. One closer I ended up with, and I had to keep looking to see if I was fine with the stats, would actually come to the top of my board, was Kyle Finnegan. And I don't know, I just probably maybe have too much in him, but I think I was getting around 15th round or later as my second closer, and just everything kind of just seemed to work out. So that was kind of one on the closer side that I ended up getting quite a lot of.
Anytime you can get all of the Washington closer, you have no choice but to do that.
Yeah, but at that point, there's just nothing. I mean,
I'm just joking. As somebody who has multiple Alexis Diaz and David Bednar, I should not be talking because I was drafted them a lot earlier than Finnegan. So
yeah, that's it. So there's a lot of, I don't know, closers. It was, I would sometimes end up with one early and just kind of like, that's who you have to get. But other times, especially in the OCs, closers can become available later. I wasn't pushing them up. So yeah. Sometimes it's like, I don't know if Finnegan was ever my first one, but he may even have been. I'm just like, these prices are ridiculous. You guys will drop someone will pop up, some teams will quit, there'll be plenty around. I did get a lot of JT Brubaker before he freaking, his arm's now gone and he's done for the year. So that was a great, great target there. That's kind of about it. I this year, in previous seasons, I had probably too many top 15 players all like grouped up. And this year I try to diversify that, especially in like the first 8 rounds. And, in case someone does get out, gets hurt, then all my teams aren't dead in the water.
So I tweeted this last night, but there were 2 players that I got on all 5 of my teams that I went into drafts knowing I was going to go aggressively with. First one was JD Martinez. So I love the type of player that JD Martinez is, which is I think he has a very high floor and has a very high ceiling. And by that, I mean, last year he was terrible, JD Martinez. he was still a top 150 player. And at the price I was getting him at, even if he does that, which I don't think he will, that's good, right? Like 15 home runs, 275 average, and playing most days is worth something. It's only 12 months ago that he was coming off a 28 home run, like 100 run, 100 RBI, 285 season. And I think that there is a pretty good statistical chance that that's who he still is. I don't think, and I'm not expecting him to go back to like first round superstar JD Martinez. But I think that it is, if I close my eyes, entirely plausible that he has a Nelson Cruz-esque second part to his career still to come and ages really well. And I love him in LA. I love, you know, the narrative with him being back with his hitting guru helps, but I'm not really paying for that. I think he's just a guy who's going to hit in the middle of that lineup every single day and give me a good batting average with power. So I love JD Martinez as just a stabilizer in the lineup. Because that's one guy I have on all five of my teams. The other one is Jeff mentioned earlier is Jose Siri, and Jose Siri is my guy for better or for worse. And boy, it could be worse this year, but I think it's going to be for better. So a few things. So Jose Siri is the fastest person in baseball by sprint speed, but for a fast guy, he also hits the ball really hard. I don't know his barrel rate, Rob, you probably do. You study such things, but his exit velocity is 80th percent exit velocity. So he's not a rabbit. He's not Gerard Dyson. He's not Malik Smith in terms of his power. He has legit 15 plus power. I'm not claiming 30 home run power, but he has legit pop to his bat. He is an extraordinary center fielder, and Tampa values up the middle defense. So about 2 weeks ago, there was an MLB.com story where it was Cash quoted all over the place where he was saying, I went to visit him this offseason and told him, be ready to play every single day. He basically is Kevin Kiermaier to them, hopefully with different health results. But for all the Tampa games, and look, he may be on the bench the next four games and I look real stupid. I fully am open to that. But I think Jose Siri is going to play every day. And I think a 15-25 season, even if he's batting ninth most days, is kind of that's what he would do if he bats ninth, 145, 150 games this year. But there's power upside, there's speed upside, because I think there's a scenario he steals 50 bases given his speed if he just makes slight on base improvements. The batting average is not going to be awesome. He strikes out way too much. So like, what's the real like wart on him? The strikeout rate's not good. And so he's far more likely to be a 220 hitter than a 260 hitter, but he's young enough and talented enough that it wouldn't be crazy if he drops his strikeout rate by 3-4-5 percent to like 28% ish. And suddenly the batting average given his speed could be 250. I don't know, Jeff, what was it that attracted you and Tanner to Jose Siri, or were you just desperate for speed and he was kind of the best speed guy out there when you were drafting?
It was just the numbers. I think the plate appearances were a little bit low. That might have been an adjustment we made and pushed
very
them
much
up.
Me too.
And yeah, he met a requirement that we try to do. It's just like balanced. Like we try to get balanced players. That doesn't always happen. It's tough to get a balance at first base. You know, it's just, but especially like in the outfield, if we still have a balance going, but we didn't in our draft. So he was more, we had a lot of those guys like Lane Thomas later, Grisham, that you could push yourself one way or the other. Like if we were short on power, I have some Jorge Soler I'm kind of hoping on. But I think he's going to play a lot. The steals are there. So that late, I was taking a chance. I kind of thought he was close, but he's hurt right now to like Leody Taveras. Like if you needed some speed, just the problem with Leody is we don't know when he's coming back and what's, you know, the whole playing time situation. But I thought that those two were really close to begin with. But then at the end, it was like, okay, then I've got Siri here. And then Yeah, he just kind of filled the need for us.
Well, and it's also in a world where Kyber Ruiz was becoming. Did I pick the right Ruiz?
Estereo
Ruiz. I knew I was having a brain cramp. Estereo Ruiz was going by like my online mains the last couple of days was going in like single digit rounds, like eighth, ninth round. And I get the Ruiz love, but Siri has better power than Ruiz, has the same weakness as Ruiz, and has just as high a possibility of stealing like 70 bases as Ruiz does, but was much cheaper than Ruiz by the end. So same warts, same upside, I think, without the cost. So I don't know. So I liked him. The last guy who was a major target for me was my boy Jeremy Pena. I love Jeremy Pena. I think the projections are wrong on Jeremy Pena. He was playing hurt for the middle of the season last year. I think he's a superstar in the making, and I was shocked that there was no helium after the Altuve
and
the continued Brantley injury. Like, I was in on Pena at his cost when I thought he was going to be the seventh place hitter all season. Now, at least for the first, whatever it is, 6-8 weeks of the season, he is going to hit first or second, and I'm not entirely convinced that Brantley can stay healthy this year, even after Altuve. I know that's not a particularly hot take that Brantley may be hurt most of the season. So I think the Altuve injury, I think Brantley's health, plus if I'm right and Pena is just that good, then good things are going to happen. And even if he reverts back to being seventh place hitter, I'm okay with that. So I think Pena was the other guy that I just loved at the cost going into draft. So those were my three big targets.
Yeah, I was shocked he still stayed at ADP like 119-ish, 115. I, like you said, it leadoff was just right up his alley, and he just didn't go any higher, which was really, really super surprising. Jose Siri, yeah, I loved him too. I have him like pretty much on like half of my Gladiator teams and a bunch of DCs.
That's awesome. That makes me feel even better. I didn't know that you were a Siri survivor, Rob, or whatever we call our fan club here.
Yeah, no, but I agree with you. I think Max EV is like 112. That's a difference from, as like you said, the difference between him and Ruiz, that this guy actually hits the ball really hard, you know? And I'm really excited about what he could do out there in center field for the Rays. And it's almost like this, he's like a new breed of player that I think that maybe the market or people don't realize it's kind of coming into play a little more. Freakish athlete. Yeah, he strikes out a lot, but like you said, he's the fastest guy in the league. He's got one of the best arms in the league. He got one of the best max EVs in the league. The guy does a whole bunch of things really, really well. So yeah, I think he's going to be, he's a Kevin Kiermaier on steroids, you know, a little bit. Like, he's just that center fielder that can get you that 15-15. And yeah, I like that call right there.
Who are your targets, Rob?
I have a lot of my targets late. Like, my targets were really multi-eligibility guys later in the draft. I really was like, I loved Ha-Seong Kim, Isaac Paredes, Luis Urias. A lot of my teams have Ohtani. And so what I wanted to do is, when I use them at pitcher, I wanted to be able to have some flexibility in my lineup so I don't have to always go to the wire. Just make sure I had a guy in my lineup that could float around, or at least multiples of them. So a lot of my teams have those three players, Bryson Stott. And I just, for Paredes, it's just, I don't think he's a 217 hitter. I don't think he's a 230 hitter that projections say he is. Doesn't strike out a lot, doesn't swing and miss a lot. He puts the bat on the ball, and his pull profile is through the roof. And I know, like, we might be limited in terms of, oh, when do I play him? When do the Rays play him? But I think, you know, Yandy is not as good at third base. I think he kind of saw that cash that he was going to play first base, and I just thought that opened it up for Paredes. So Paredes was a guy I tried to get on a lot of teams. Ha-Seong Kim is going to gain that second eligibility. Well, I mean, if Bogaerts is, going to be healthy, at least he should be gaining that second base eligibility. I felt like he's a guy who just is exactly like Thairo Estrada going 60 picks later. I honestly think he's going to, like, I think he'll outproduce Anthony Volpe. That's my bold take of the year. I think that they're going
to, like it.
Yeah. I think they're going to be like, if they both do 15-15, which is pretty reasonable for both of them. I don't know why Anthony Volpe's going that high when you can get that kind of production later on. I guess they're shooting for the moon, but Otani, Strider, and Cole were like my biggest guys up at the top. It's funny because during a couple of the drafts, I was hanging out in the back with some people, and then me and Toby, Batflip Crazy, were sharing some, you know, some notes and some of the draft that we have done previously. And I had my player page up, and he goes, "Man, how did you get that much Strider this draft season?" And I said, "Well, I drafted early, and he was going 38. It's like, how do you not get the best, one of the best pitchers in the game at 38? But I really tried to hammer up the pitching, especially with Cole. And Otani, I just really, I don't know, he's just one of a kind. He kind of fits what I'm trying to do in just having real good, like you were saying earlier, Rob, like just like having your fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth starting pitcher be so formidable. And I think he just gives you that ability to add him in. He also helped me in my main event where I took him third overall, and there was like batting values dropping to me, and it didn't make me have to panic and say, "Oh, I need a pitcher here." You know, he just a little bit peace of mind in the back of my head that I could put him in there on some weeks, and you know, allowed me to grab some guy like Dansby Swanson falling to 130 and stuff like that. It's like, oh, okay, well, I could take him here. I don't, you know, really, really need a pitcher, even though I want one here.
You know what I love, Rob? Sorry to interrupt. Between your multi-position eligibility point and the Otani point and the way you framed Otani, is it such a different approach saying that as opposed to I need to win the draft? I want my Rotolab or I want my spreadsheet to say I've won the draft. Because the reality is why those multi-position eligibility guys are so valuable. Why the – forget what Otani's just going to do as a hitter, which is obviously obvious, which is – obviously awesome. If you just put him at DH all year and leave him there, Otani's going to be brilliant. He's going to be amazing. But what you've just described is like, it's a 26-week long season. I don't know what's going to happen. We can't know a draft season. We're trying to maximize flexibility and maximize optionality and ultimately the stats at by the last day of the season. And so you don't know how valuable Paredes being able to fit in three positions. You don't know how many weeks as of today you're going to use Otani as a pitcher, but it's optionality that will show up by the end of the season, not on draft day. And I think that it's I certainly sometimes fall prey to the I want to win this draft. I have to win the draft. And it's such an illusion. It's such a like it doesn't exist. It's not a real thing. So I think that's really good points that you've made there. To remind people that it's about winning the season, not winning the draft.
I think I got to change my team names to optionality on those teams where I have multiple of those guys. I like that. It's really nice. Jeff looks like he's having a little bit of a situation. He made a noise
to the IL.
Oh, shoot.
Oh,
that's a thing.
Yeah, that's a thing. I'm just trying to get someone else in on some of my teams, but I don't think I have a.
Well, that's really, you focus. You could. I don't have any Verlander. But that sucks.
What about me, Jeff? As a fucking Met fan,
Do you have much Verlander on your fantasy team?
I don't. Thankfully, not. I think I just have one gladiator share of Verlander, and that's not because I didn't like him. It's just I've taken other pitchers where.
Oh. Not only that, but Patrick Corbin's getting hit around. Like I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry, guys. That's a rough way to start the season. All of you who started Patrick Corbin today.
Oh my God!
I'm just joking.
All right, so quick fades.
I got one quick fade, but it's a category of players that I was fading as opposed to an individual player. I was avoiding starting pitching on bad teams, which may sound obvious, but I did, for anybody who was at First Pitch Arizona, you saw me talk about it, but I carried it through to now. It's very hard to get 10 wins on a team that is well out of the playoffs. And there is a big group of teams that are very clearly already out of the playoffs right now. It's not impossible, right? Sandy Alcantara showed us that it is possible, but he's such a unicorn in today's baseball that the vast majority of starting pitchers even if you're on a bad team like the Marlins certainly were last year. You need to get deep into games. You need to have a lineup that scores runs. You need to have a bullpen that can hold a league for you. And we've been so taught over the years, for good sabermetrics reasons, don't chase wins. Wins are unpredictable. There's no doubt wins are unpredictable. I can't tell you whether, you know, Gerrit Cole is going to win 13 games, 16 games, 20 games with any degree of confidence right now. But I can tell you with pretty good confidence that a healthy Gerrit Cole has a pretty high percentage of getting over 10 wins. Problem is, I also can tell you with pretty high probability, there's no pitcher on Oakland's going to win 10 games this year. There just isn't. Now, might one? Yeah, but you don't even know who that's going to be. It's not even necessarily their good pitcher that's going to do it. So I just avoided pitchers on teams that had basically a 0% chance of winning a wild card. I just looked at the Fangraphs playoff projections, and if you were basically a zero to make the playoffs, I faded all your pitchers, and because wins are a category, and it's really hard to be a top 30, top 50 pitcher without at least 10-ish wins. So that was my fade, was all the pitchers on bad teams were just off my draft board by rule this year. And we'll see how that works out.
At cost, or even if they were just like at a point where, yeah, like, I mean, oh, like, this is like pretty juicy.
In the 25th round, would I have taken one of them? Sure. So like, I didn't literally not have them on my computer, but in reality, there was always, I don't think if I went through all of my teams, I have a single pitcher on Pittsburgh. I don't have a single starting pitcher on Cincinnati. I don't have a single starting pitcher on Oakland. And there are good pitchers on some of those teams. I'm not saying they're bad. They're just not what I wanted, because I want pitchers who have at least a possibility of getting wins.
Very fair. Makes sense. Jeff, have you rearranged your teams yet? You got Verlander.
I just had to deal with him on one team. Well, I don't really have a replacement. I'm hoping Carrasco moves up. It's the only, like,
Announced McGill is gonna replace.
That's what I figured. I just don't have a choice. Like, there's just no one there that I have other
it's
guys.
It's the Mets, Jeff. It's possible McGill gets hurt between now and Sunday too. Oh, so
1000%. No, you're right. Listen, there's nothing to be sorry about. It is what it is. You know, nobody has to apologize for me for being a Mets fan. It is what it is. Good thing I have baseball and all this shit I have to do to, you know, and content wise and playing fantasy. Otherwise, it'd be a mess. But that's why I got into this so much anyway, because the Mets are so cursed. But I'm not gonna switch the team.
Who are your fades, Jeff?
Oh, I think the one fade I had is, if I had the choice between any two hitters early on and one was an outfielder, I was fading the outfielders. When I went through building the draft backwards, like, who did I like in the 30th round? Is there anyone I thought? It seemed like all of them were outfielders. So if anything was going to fall and I was going to take a chance, it was going to be outfielding. There was some starters, but those kind of just got moved up, that there wasn't anything. So that was one of my biggest fades, was just outfielders. I mean, I was going to pass on, if Judge was my top player, I'm going to take him, but later on it was like, well, I'm just going to try to fill my middles and so forth. And even in Towers, in an auction, I spent $20 total on my outfield, not on a player, just completely across the board. And one was on $12 on one guy. So I just thought that it's a good position to stream this year, and we just don't know. I mean, people said it was shallow, but I think it was more just not knowing where the playing time was going to end up. And that was just one thing that I faded all the early ones and took some later.
I totally agree, Jeff. I think a lot of that got ingrained during the DC season. And there's no doubt in December, it's like, I just look at the outfield. I wasn't drafting them, but if I were Rob and I were drafting, like, there's so much uncertainty. Whereas now I look at the waiver wires, as you say, of my leagues, and there's legit 10 outfielders that you could pick up for next week. Like, I'm not saying they're all great. I'm not saying they all have good matchups, but they're all playable, and that didn't used to exist. Like, it used to be, oh, there's three catchers on the waiver wire and a bunch of scrubs. And so I agree, you almost want to have outfield spots to be able to take advantage of that, I think.
Yeah
And I'm sure, what else could you guys find late? Was there any positions, or was it just single players?
there was nothing I couldn't find at least one guy of that I liked enough that I would be fine with. So there was like in one draft, I needed a second baseman. I got Massey. And it's like, am I confident Massey will be on my roster for 6 months and give me $10 worth of earnings? Hells no. But like, he's good for this week. Let's see if there's a better second baseman available next week. And I'm fine. And it's why I hate when people say you have to get a second baseman or a third baseman or a first baseman by this guy. It's like, no, you don't. It's like, I have one team I needed a third baseman. I have Evan Longoria because Evan Longoria had four games this period. And like, is there a chance Evan Longoria gets hurt like today and doesn't make it through the four games? Of course, there's a chance Evan Longoria doesn't make it through, but he's fine. He's going to play all four games or three of the four games this weekend. We'll see who's available. So there was always somebody who I was just fine with at every position that are not awesome, that are not like season long guys, but you're not drafting season long guys in round 26. You're just drafting a guy you can use right now and then move him.
Absolutely. I'm right with you, Jeff. I was on that whole wait on outfielders thing as well. Actually, it's funny, on the main event on Saturday, I was in John Posma. I was every league with John Posma this weekend. And
I'm sorry.
He kicked
so
a good
and he's such a nice guy.
100%. 100%. And he's like, hey, I don't know if you read the rules, but you know, you have to field five outfielders. But the Lane Thomases, the Trent Grishams, the Jose series, I just think like that they're just littered throughout in the back half. And it was such a crazy quick thing that everyone is like, outfielders are dead early in the draft season. And some people kind of just hung on to that narrative and didn't really, maybe they didn't dive too deep. Maybe they just didn't like those players, you know, I don't know. But yeah, I think outfielder, and I think you make a good point, Rob. Like, I think it's, you know, I always try to fill out like the bottom four or five rounds of, I have a little draft grid in every round. They just write down who I would consider taking there at every position. And I think it's when you do something like that, I found at least that I unearth some players like, okay, like I don't mind taking this guy here. And there's players that pop up. It's like, okay, yeah, like you said, he's not going to be on your team the whole season, but, it's the perfect rounds to speculate on someone who might stick around for the whole season, you know?
Hey, let's actually go over to something we were going to talk about last week. And
yeah,
what your thoughts were, was the guys that are gone for a while.
Yes.
Like Bryce Harper.
Great point.
Trevor Story. Altuve, we were even looking at Polanco and he was going later than some. And it's like, well, he's like, you know, healthy, possibly, you know, 10th rounder, but, you know, now he's like barely in like getting drafted. And it was just like, I don't know. I just felt like there was, I don't know if it was the draft room, like the software board that people were looking at, or why some of those guys were going so high compared to the other ones. I don't know. I didn't get it. I just thought Story would just give as much love as Harper, but I guess not.
Yeah. I'm sure whoever took them had a rationalization in their mind at every time when they took them. I didn't take any of the – I took a couple of injured pitchers who I thought were coming. So I have like one Glass now, Wright, but Wright's coming back like in a week, 10 days. So he's not exactly the same. I didn't take any of the injured hitters. The seven bench spots are just so valuable to me that it's just tough for me to stash Altuve for 2 months.
Yeah, and I guess what is the exact timeline for Trevor Story? Because yeah, he got drafted in only two main events compared to like 50 for both Harper and Altuve. Is he anywhere near their timelines or just that much further back?
I think he was looking at like possibly like late July, which I mean, that could be the same with both of those two too. I guess there's less of a timeline with them, or maybe people just forgotten him. I didn't know what kind of the disconnect was with that. And yeah, and I was kind of like with Polanco, I was like, well, maybe someone's going to take it when they're taking chances on him. It's like, well, he's supposed to be back in a few weeks. He's just not healed up yet, but then just wasn't going at all either. So,
yeah, I mean, I worry about Polanco. I have loved Polanco for a long time. I always worry about guys who had an injury at the end of last season, like had all winter to heal, and it's like, why are they suddenly going to get better? And
Jordan Alvarez, Jordan Alvarez.
Yeah, like it's so I have a lot of Gordon now because I really worry about Polanco's health. I want him to come back healthy, but I'm skeptical that he's going to be back anytime soon.
Yeah, that definitely worried me that it's just a lingering injury. It's actually a lot of it was a question I was throwing around to people, you know, all Vegas weekend. It's like, who would you rather stash, you know, Grissom or Polanco? And most people said Grissom because of the, you know, because of the injury thing, even though Polanco ended up being about 20 picks ahead of Grissom. I guess, you know, we could see either one back shortly and can both of them can blow out their ADP.
I think the right answer may be neither of them, though.
Neither.
The problem. Yeah. I think Garcia could be the starting shortstop for a while. They signed him to a lucrative contract, you know, a three-year, $9 million contract just before opening day today, which they offered the same contract, is my understanding, to Grissom. Only for Grissom, it was 10-year, $9 million to try to lock him up for the next 10 years, because the Braves somehow do that for their players.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You want to do one quick?
Yeah, let's do this. Do this in like one word answers.
100%.
I'm the one that's who's guilty of this all the time.
One word answers. Give me a guy going in the top 50 right now that you think has a chance to be ended up past 200 by the end of the season. Jeff, a batter.
Michael Harris.
Boom.
I'm a little bit worried about if he can hit. Like I said, it's going to be one of these steals. I know he can steal bases, but he may be buried at the bottom of the lineup hitting 220. That's what I'm worried about.
Very fair.
I love the guy, but Juan Soto. I worry about health, and I think if I was going from the top 25 for this question, and I worry about Juan Soto quite a bit.
Yeah. That was my answer too. I think everyone knows that was my answer. But even the oblique thing, he's a very twisty swinger. Like, he swings with his whole body, not really all with his arm. So, and absolutely. Okay. Flip the script and go guy going past 200 that might end up in the top 50. Jeff.
Oh. It's just so many guys, if they just stay healthy. I'll go with, I actually don't know if his numbers will be there, but his flexibility will help, was Brendan Donovan. I think he's leading off, getting the counting stats at the top of that lineup and just being able to put up 15-15, he could just kind of volume his way into the top.
I obviously think it's Jose Siri, but people have heard my take on Jose Siri by now. So I will instead go with Josh Naylor. I think that a 30-10 to 80 season is not crazy for him. And with decent counting stats, which obviously is putting up 30 home runs, he's going to have decent runs in RBIs. That could get him into the top 50. So I will go with Josh Naylor as my guy other than Jose Siri.
All right. Let's see. I'm going to go. Let's go with a pitcher. No, are we doing pitchers too?
We're doing pitchers separately.
Separately. Okay. We're doing pitchers separately. So I'm going to go with, this is completely, I don't have any of this guy, but I could see if he gets some full time run and he's actually the real deal. But Garrett Mitchell, I think he's got a shot go 2020. And, maybe he'll skyrocket himself into that type of value at the end of the season. All right, let's do pitchers now. Top 50, who is going to be a bust going past 200? Rob.
It's really lame. My answer was Justin Verlander. He has since been put on the IL. So I feel like I need to take a different pick a different guy, because that's just so lame. The answer is not Jacob DeGrom, because Jacob DeGrom is so good that even if he only throws 100 innings, he can still sneak in the top 200. So my answer is Dylan Cease. If I don't get to do Verlander, there's only so many pitchers. So my easiest fade of top pitchers this year for just skill reason was Cease. I don't think he'll be horrible, but it could be, it could, it, it's such a fine line between what he did last year and like a 4.4 ERA and a gross whip with a lot of strikeouts. Like he's the Robbie Ray phenomenon is certainly there for him.
Okay. I don't like where Sandy Alcantara is, but I don't think he's also going to be like bottom 200, like just unplayable toward the end. But I'm going to go with Shane Bieber. It just may be done with him. The velocity finally catches up. It's just one of those age things where doesn't make it, even though I've drafted him. I think that there's a huge floor for him where he's just at the good old Patrick Corbin level here soon.
All right. I'm going to go Kevin Gausman. Only for the reason that I don't see anyone else I want to take here.
We basically thinned it out.
I totally agree with Jeff. Like I don't have any Alcantara, but I don't think that he can fall out of the, you know, that far, because I think he'll still rack up innings. So it's just a process of elimination. I was going to go Christian Javier just because maybe there's just a possibility that his, you know, his quick ascension is not as real as we think it is. But I don't think he would drop that far down, but I'll just go Kevin Gausman just for the sake of this is ridiculously hard to do. and you took probably the most volatile pitcher up there in Dylan Cease. So, all right, let's flip it around. Top past 200, who's going to go into the top 50 pitcher?
Jeff, you go first this time.
This is a guy I actually liked earlier in the year, and then he kind of lost his job, and now he's obviously got it back, is David Peterson. I think if he just gets the strikeouts are there, he's got generates some fieldable contact, and it's just like if he gets the walks under control, he's kind of like a Cease, but down here. He could just move himself up and people could be talking about him. But I like a lot of what he does. So David Peterson.
I got Peterson my last two mains, and he's another guy I thought once it was very clear and like announced he had a starting job that his ADP was just gonna shoot up, and it went up a little bit, but you didn't have to go crazy aggressive if you wanted David Peterson. So I was a little bit surprised with that. That is a really good pick. My guy is Jack Flaherty. I think Jack Flaherty has done it before. It's a while ago now, 2019. It's really, to me, as I tweeted today, a bet on his health, which is not a safe bet by any stretch of the imagination. But if he's healthy, healthy Jack Flaherty has always had a 26-30% strikeout rate. All the research shows strikeout rate is incredibly sticky, and it's very hard to get into the top 50 players as a pitcher without a elite strikeout rate. Two, it's very hard to get it without wins. I think the Cardinals are going to be a very good team, both in terms of lineup, in terms of defense, in terms of bullpen, all the things, ticks all those boxes. In terms of what I want to from a context perspective. So strikeout rate, team context, has shown volume, is a free agent, so I don't think they baby him even though he has the injury history. So you put it all together. If you want to buy into the he's a free agent, so he's playing for a paycheck narrative, by all means. But I think Jack Flaherty is a top, has a shot if he makes 30 starts at being a top 20 pitcher again. And if a few breaks go his way, he wins 20 games and he's a top 10 pitcher and in the top 50.
You Canadians, you think alike. I know our robot friend is a real Jack Flaherty stan as well.
We were stealing our Flaherty's and Matz's during the Platinum Draft. He got one, I think I got the other. So it worked out. And that's a guy we never talked about ever, Phil and I, so.
Interesting. Team context, not that great, but I like what he's doing with his new ball club, and I'll go Jameson Taillon. 23 strikeouts in the spring, no walks. I know it's the spring, but he was working on the sweeper and changing the shapes of some of his pitches, and I think that's the kind of the best way to really get into different numbers of the season. I just think he's going to have a career year, and I think that the Cubs will provide maybe a little more wins than we kind of think that he will. So I'll go Jameson Taillon and hope that my four shares of him this weekend is He's good. He's good to propel me to victory. But
I love Tyon Robb. I think he's also a perfect example of like what you want from like your sixth, seventh, eighth starting pitcher. And I assume that's kind of where you were taking him. If teams that I look at, and again, I'm not shitting on anybody else's team. You can win lots of different ways, but I see some teams where it's like your third, maybe your fourth starting pitcher, and I like Tyon, but then it's starting to be like, oh, that's because then your fifth starter is later than him. So
100%, and that's something I forgot to comment on earlier. But it's so funny you said that. It is impossible to just scroll through, like everyone's showing each other's team. Look at my team. We're sharing each other's phones and all these little boards, and it is. Like you said, that's the first thing I look at. Or when I see, you know, Chris Bassett, SP2 or SP3, I'm like, oh boy, you know. But like you said, I think that we can all get to a similar production level from our SP1 through 3. And I think that the differentiation will come from those back half pitchers. And it's exactly what I looked at. First eyes go to the yellow deep and see where you're at with, you know, SP 8 through 10. And 100% agree with that. But awesome episode, guys. We're back in action with the season. We're going to keep rolling along. And guys, do you have any parting words before we get out of here? Enjoy this fantastic opening day.
Baseball. It's great. It's great to be back. And we talked a little bit about what we're going to do in season. So I think we're going to keep the momentum from the preseason going. And as Rob has said, every second episode is going to be for Patreon supporters. Every second one, like this one, is going to be public for everybody. So if you like the podcast, or if you just want to win your fantasy league, like, you should subscribe to Rob's Patreon. But every second one will be public. So you will still hear us if, for whatever reason, you're not in a position to, or you don't want to subscribe. We will be here every second week through the season, and then be the other place every other week.
100%. And I'll go on top of that and just say, for $5 a month, that's it. You can get 2 launch angles plus minimum 7 pods a week from me. So.
Tell me, because I know you said this out when I subscribed, but quickly, you're doing one which nobody does. Am I right? Before Fab, so you're going to do a Fab preview podcast. Is that right?
I am. Yes, I'm going to do a pre-Fab. I know the guys from Pitcher List, Adam Howe and
I apologize. And
Kevin. Yeah, they do one.
I didn't mean to disrespect. I don't listen to as many podcasts as most people do, so I didn't mean to disrespect anybody for their podcast.
Yep. Yeah, and it's pretty good. I'm just going to cover a lot of the stuff that I think is missing from the prefab, and mostly it's like looking at drops too, you know, just trying to highlight when to hold the guy, like, for instance, like a Danny Jansen thing, right? Just trying to highlight those things, like, should you hold them? Should you, you know, drop them? Stuff like that. But yeah, going to do that prefab pod on Saturdays or Sundays, you know. I don't want to wait too long because I think the news, you know, kind of shift, but I know everyone likes to get into a fab early, but you know, I'm gonna make adjustments on the fly, and kind of like how Vlad does his little, you know, update at 8 p.m. I'm gonna try to do that myself, you know, just because I think it's important to get the news out. But that's what's great about being in the Discord too, is it's just like an instant boom, you know, everyone has some instant news right there at the table. But yeah, but 5 days a week I'll be doing the news and notes, you know, in the morning, 15 minutes of a quick blast of the night before, lineup pods to help you you know, set your lineups during the week. And of course, we got the Maddie Modica too on Saturday. We're going to preview all the 2-star pitchers the week ahead, and also highlight some of the 2-star pitchers 2 weeks ahead of time. So I'm really going to be setting everyone up for success.
I would pay $5 a month just to hear you and Matt talk about like the best like veal parm sandwich you can get in Brooklyn or in Queens. Like just hearing you and Matt talk 4 times a month is worth $5. That's $1.25. Like, you can't even buy a double espresso for $1.25. So I think it's great. It's great value. Cool. It's great to support Rob. I've earned my commission for the week. But I think it's great what you're doing.
Thank you, fellas. All right, gentlemen. Have a wonderful day.
We'll see you guys enjoy the next baseball. Week.
Absolutely.
Okay. Talk.
Take care. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. If you enjoy what we are doing and the content we're providing for you, please leave a rating or review. It goes a ton for the podcast and for me, Jeff, and Rob as well. So that being said, hope everyone enjoys this wonderful first week and weekend of baseball, and we'll see you next week.